Funding for Smart Talk is provided by Capital Blue Cross. For 80 years, Capital Blue Cross has offered products that provide peace of mind and promote good health, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Health and Wellness Centers that provide in-person service and inspire healthy living. Capital Blue Cross is behind you for whatever lies ahead. More information is at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross. Live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by the team of cardiologists, surgeons, nurses, physicians assistants, and rehabilitation specialists from Pinnacle Health Cardiovascular Institute, part of UPMC Pinnacle, delivering a broad range of traditional and highly specialized procedures.
Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Earlier this week, President Donald Trump released details of his plans to upgrade and modernize the nation's infrastructure. That includes transportation, water, parks, and dams. Over the next hour, we'll discuss the president's plan and Pennsylvania's infrastructure needs. Up front, the American Society of Civil Engineers has been sounding the alarm on a crumbling infrastructure for the past 20 years. I had an opportunity to speak with the ASCE's president, Christina Swallow. Christina Swallow, welcome to the program.
Scott, it's good to be here.
The ASCE has been calling for improvements and modernization of the nation's infrastructure for the past 20 years. Here it is 20 years later. From time to time, your organization does a report card. Last year, you graded the nation's infrastructure as a D+. Give me a few more details. Why a D+?
So every 4 years, we release the report card, and we look at eight categories when we're evaluating the infrastructure. So we look at its condition, we look at its capacity, we look at the funding availability, the availability to maintain it in the future, sustainability criteria, to determine whether or not it's meeting the needs of our communities. And when we've evaluated the 16 categories of infrastructure, we found that in many cases that the infrastructure was in poor condition, it was at risk for failure, and it was not meeting our community's needs.
What part of the infrastructure is in need of most improvement or modernization?
We have, as I mentioned, 16 categories that we look at, including everything from aviation to wastewater. We found that the worst grade was given to transit at a D-. But there are several, in fact, most, if the overall grade is a D+, there are most are in the D range. So all of our infrastructure needs work.
Well, when you talk about the D- with transit, what in particular about transit is not working in this country?
Well, so when you look at transit, we're talking about whether or not it meets our needs, whether or not it can help our communities grow, make sure that our citizens can get to and from work, school, home, and then also make sure that it's safe, right? So we have examples of the systems where they've been failing, where there are breakdowns, where people are stuck in cars, or where there's system failures, and it's not enabling the communities to grow. Transit is a critical component of our overall surface transportation. It provides an alternative to driving or walking or biking. It needs to be in better condition.
But, you know, on the other side, when I look at your list of 16, the one area both nationally and here in Pennsylvania that seems to do well is rail. Now, I'm assuming there that we're talking about rail freight, but talk about that a little bit. I mean, you say the transit is not doing well and is an area that really can be improved. What about rail?
So rail did receive the highest grade at B, and that is in large part due to the investment that the private rail companies have invested. In 2015 alone, they invested $27 billion. And as you mentioned, Scott, we are talking about primarily freight rail. As we've seen in the last several weeks, there's still real concerns regarding passenger rail. So we need to continue to work on the passenger rail. But when you're talking about freight rail, the companies have invested, which is one of our key solutions and one we've been talking about for years. And we've seen the capacity for movement of freight increase, and it's meeting the needs.
Meeting the needs is one thing, but you used the word earlier when you were talking about transit, and that was safety. Are there parts of our infrastructure that pose a danger?
Yeah, so we can use rail, right? There's a requirement that we have passenger train control, positive train control, and that's not been implemented yet across all of the systems where we're talking about passenger rail. It's something that the rails are struggling to implement. It's a challenge, and that's led to some of the crashes we've had lately. We also have, you know, concerns regarding bridge failures and water main failures. Whenever there's a water main failure, there's a risk of actually transportation safety issues if it impacts the roadways. So there are definitely safety issues at hand here. It's not just a quality of life or an economic. There's also a health and safety issue that we're concerned about, which is why we're ringing the bell.
President Trump earlier this week outlined plans for his infrastructure improvement and modernization plan. First of all, your overall thoughts on what the president is proposing?
We're glad that the president has come out with an infrastructure package. It's something we've been advocating for, as you mentioned, 20 years. So it's good to see a leadership of our country bringing forward a package to have a discussion to actually hopefully create some legislative text. He's putting forward $200 billion, which he's hoping to leverage to $1.5 trillion. We think that we need to talk about that a little bit further, about that level of investment and the leveraging capability of that. We would like to see the Highway Trust Fund fixed in the legislation. We're glad that he's talking about streamlining the program and finding ways that we can continue to protect our environment and the public input process, but still shorten the review time. And we're happy that he's talking about job creation and the fact that our infrastructure drives our economy.
Okay, money obviously is the big reason that over the past 20 years there has not been as much attention paid to infrastructure as what your group or what most Americans would like to see. The president, $200 billion from the federal government leveraged against state and private money. Let's face it, and you're well aware that states may be even in worse shape fiscally than the federal government. So that would seem to mean that most of the money would have to come from the private sector. How would that work?
You know, there's private sector, public-private partnerships are a great way to leverage our funding and our municipal and federal investment. They don't work in every case, though. And so we're going to have to find a way that we can make sure that there's enough additional federal investment to actually improve our infrastructure. And one way that we can do that, in addition to leveraging with public-private partnerships, is he's proposing a $200 billion investment is raise the gas tax. The U.S. Chamber has come out in support of a 25-cent increase in the fuel tax. And just yesterday, there was a meeting, and there's been media reports that the president has been supportive of that concept. Doing that would raise an additional $400 billion. So there's ways that we can work to help our communities meet their needs. And it's not just going, it doesn't have to be limited to the $200 billion that he's put into the package so far.
Does ASCE support an increase in the gasoline tax?
Yes, we do, and we have supported that for the duration of our efforts. That is the most direct way to increase investment in surface transportation. We currently face a $2 trillion investment gap between now and 2025. Of that, over $1 trillion of that gap is surface transportation. So we need to find a way to increase that investment, and the fuel tax is the most direct way to do that.
As you're well aware, that would be very unpopular with a lot of motorists across this country. But not saying that it's impossible, but there are other parts to that. Americans, for the most part, aren't driving as much, and there is a move to move away from gasoline-powered vehicles. We don't know when that's going to happen overall. But still, a reliance on a fuel tax, is that something that you can count on?
You know, interestingly, you had a couple of points in there, and I do want to go back and talk about the concept of Americans supporting a fuel tax increase. More than half of our states in the last 5 years have actually increased their state fuel tax.
Yes, Pennsylvania is one of them.
So we're seeing that Americans are supportive of it when they realize that there will be a benefit to them. So I just wanted to start there. But then when you talk about the concept of the fuel tax being a long-term solution, you're right. There are challenges there. We have to look at finding alternative ways to fund our system. And there are programs out there that are being tested. But today, the most effective, fastest way to increase that investment is the fuel tax.
What happens if we don't do something as a nation to improve and modernize our infrastructure?
I mentioned earlier that there's a $2 trillion investment gap. If we don't invest that, and for context, that's almost twice as much. So right now we're investing about $2.6 trillion between now and 2025, and we need an additional $2 trillion. If we don't invest that, our economy will suffer and our communities will suffer. We talked about the public health and safety challenges, but the economy, the economic outcome of that will be a loss in GDP of $3.9 trillion, so twice the investment, $7 trillion in lost business sales, and 2.5 million lost jobs in 2025 alone. It will impact our economy. It pulls us back. And that doesn't even begin to start talking about the fact that our infrastructure will continue to deteriorate and the cost will go up.
You know, many times when we've talked about infrastructure improvements over the years, jobs, I don't know, a lot of times our elected leaders often talk about the jobs aspect of it first. And, you know, we know that there is a great benefit to creating jobs with improving the infrastructure. Is this something that is on the public's radar, though, aside from jobs? Does the public realize just how essential this is to improving and modernizing our infrastructure?
I think there's two parts to that question. When we survey the public, and there's been lots of surveys done, the majority, over 80% of the public support increased investment in our infrastructure. So when we ask them about it, they definitely support it and understand it. I think the challenge is on a daily basis, if they're getting to work on time, if their water turns on when they open the faucet, they're not thinking about our infrastructure. So it's a little bit back of mind. And that's why we're glad that the president mentioned this in the State of the Union. He's brought forth a package so that we can have a public conversation about the importance of investing in infrastructure and how that will help drive our economy forward and help protect us as community members and make sure that we have a good quality of life, that we have access to potable drinking water when we turn the faucet on every time, and that we can get to and from work safely.
You mentioned the report cards, and your organization does a state-by-state report card. The last one for Pennsylvania was in 2014, where Pennsylvania got a C-minus, a little bit higher than the national report card. What infrastructure in this state is in need of attention?
You know, in Pennsylvania, of the 22,000 bridges, nearly one in four is considered structurally deficient today. That's the highest, or at the time of the report card, that was the highest percentage in the nation. So that's one of the areas that really needs to be focused on. There's also a significant backlog of projects in roads and wastewater systems, which received a D-minus. So there's an opportunity, really, for Pennsylvania to start to improve their infrastructure.
Actually, and you said at the time of the report card, that was in 2014. Since then, Pennsylvania has enacted a gas tax that has made some improvements to the structurally deficient bridges, but there still are a few thousand of them out there. Christina Swallow, president of the American Society of Civil Engineers, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
We're going to be talking about Pennsylvania's infrastructure needs and what President Trump's plan will do for Pennsylvania coming up. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
Smart Talk is supported by Capital Blue Cross, providing health care coverage accepted by doctors and specialists in all 50 states. More information is available at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross. Live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC Pinnacle, committed to research that improves health, reduces recovery times, and brings new treatments and therapies to our area before they're available elsewhere. More information is at upmcpinnacle.com.
So you heard about the national picture with Christina Swallow of the American Society of Civil Engineers. Now we're going to focus on Pennsylvania. What infrastructure improvements does Pennsylvania need to make? Joining us in the studio is Robert Latham, Executive Vice President at Associated Pennsylvania Constructors and with the Pennsylvania Highway Information Association. Mr. Latham, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good morning. Good to be here.
Also joining us on the phone is Gregory Scott, Senior Engineer with Buckhart Horn Engineers, Architects and Planners in Pittsburgh. and also chairman of ASCE's Pittsburgh Section Government Relations Committee. Mr. Scott, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Scott. Thank you for having me.
If you have a question or a comment, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that's 1-800-729-7532. What do you think Pennsylvania needs to do to improve and modernize our infrastructure? You know, what are the essentials? Which should take the priorities? And I also asked the question, something that Christina Swallow brought up, a 25 cent per gallon gasoline tax. Are you willing to pay that? Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Greg Scott, I want to start with you. You heard Christina talk a little bit there at the end of our conversation about Pennsylvania. What infrastructure needs do we have in Pennsylvania overall?
Christine mentioned that we do the report card for the state of Pennsylvania every 4 years. The last one we have is 2014. We're actually the team. We have about 60 engineers from across the state working on a new one that will be released in November of this year. So we're obviously very eager to refresh the data and get a new look. But in 2014, what we saw, while the state average was a C, when you looked at the grades, the transportation grades, roads, bridges, transit, and what we call the environmental grades, wastewater, drinking water, stormwater. That's an important thing to note. In Pennsylvania, we actually look at stormwater as a separate category than when national kind of lumps it with wastewater. We feel it's particularly important for Pennsylvania. Those three grades were also Ds. So we see a trend in certain segments of the infrastructure that's kind of falling behind and is bad, poor condition. So really, those are the areas that need to be focused, transportation and a lot of the environmental topics.
All right, so Bob Latham, you're here mostly to talk about transportation. What transportation needs, infrastructure needs, are there here in Pennsylvania?
Well, we have tremendous needs, particularly on rebuilding our interstate highway system. One of the things that we have done in 2013, we did pass a rather substantial transportation funding bill here in Pennsylvania, and I was very proud to say that it was a precursor to those around the country. 21 other states have followed our lead after that. One of the things that we point to is we have done a lot of paving. We've improved surface conditions of our roadways, and we've also cut our inventory of structurally deficient bridges, round numbers, from about 6,000 structurally deficient bridges to about 3,000. So we're having a tremendous impact on the conditions of our roads and bridges, and what is known as Act 89 has been very positive in terms of quality of life and mobility in Pennsylvania. That said, we still have a long, long way to go.
All right, let's talk about that long way to go.
So in 2010, the Transportation Advisory Commission did a study and said, what are your annual what's the annual needs gap in terms of funding for not just highways, but public transit and other modes of transportation? That number was about $3.5 billion, and the Act 89 funded about $2.5 billion per year across modes, and that's local roads, public transit, as well as the PennDOT system, if you will. So, I mean, you know, that's a billion-dollar-year gap, so we still have a lot to do. The other thing is, anybody that's driven our interstate system is very, very familiar that it's badly in need of repair. We face our geology, our weather patterns are different than other state in many other states. So we have a lot of wear and tear on the roads. We're the Keystone State for a reason, because you have to pass through Pennsylvania pretty much to get from the East Coast to anywhere else. So as we look out into the future, how are we going to accommodate the distribution economy? Amazon says it's going to deliver with drones, but that's going to be, you know, a far time into the future. So in order to facilitate that, we're going to have to upgrade our surface transportation infrastructure.
All right. So let's talk about the president's plan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have to say that there weren't a whole lot of specifics here. I mean, the president talked about leveraging $200 billion from the federal government. And Greg Scott, I'm going to ask you the same question, by the way. $200 billion from the federal government that would be leveraged with state governments, and then private public partnerships as well. That sounds like a whole lot of money to get to $1.5 trillion that we need as a nation.
Well, you know, during the campaign, Donald Trump, the candidate, was the first Republican candidate I heard talk about infrastructure. As a matter of fact, I will never forget one of the debates when there were like 15 people on the stage still, and he started talking about it. Carly Farina looked at him and said, "You sound like a Democrat." But we were very excited to hear a candidate and then have him be successful of coming in saying we need to rebuild our own systems. And he included airports, port facilities, everything, because it's true. You only have to pivot back to the ASCE report card to see that. Let me give you a couple comments on the good, the bad, and the ugly, I think, with this proposal. First of all, there are some very positive things in there. It enables the states to toll the interstates, and we've been talking about that for years here in Pennsylvania. Our section of I-95 is the only non-tolled section of I-95 in the country, and it was costing us tremendous amounts of money. The proposal asks for developers and those who will benefit from transit development to pay for it, and you can see a lot going on with some of the lines down in SEPTA. They need $1 billion a year to upgrade their rolling stock because of development going on along those lines. The people benefiting from that might be asked to share in the cost.
For those who don't know SEPTA, system, southeastern Pennsylvania, Philadelphia,
yeah, thank
mostly.
Thank you. Yes, in the Philadelphia area, mm-hmm. One of the largest transit systems in the country. Allows them to sell federal assets, and not so much for Pennsylvania, but states like Maryland that have a lot of federal roads. They're looking at that as a program there. And workforce initiatives, which I think your other speaker talked to, are very, very important, I think, to our industry. So there are some good things. The big thing that's missing here is there is no fix for the Federal Highway Trust Fund. The Federal Highway Trust Fund is funded primarily out of the current gas tax, the federal portion of the gas tax. Pennsylvania relies on 40% of its capital. That's our road construction, I guess, if you will. 40% comes from that highway trust fund, in spite of the fact that we increased our own funding several years ago. So there's no fix to that, and we see that as a big deficit.
So, Greg Scott, let me turn to you. There's a lot that Bob just covered there, but what would you like to add to it as far as the president's plan?
I think when the engineers and planners who do these systems have a perspective of the whole, I mean, you can't just fix their bridges. You need the roads that connect the bridges. Transit has a critical role to play, particularly in dense urban cores, for moving people to the business and to evenings out, et cetera. So water, wastewater, stormwater really all play together. You can't just look at any one component of these systems and try to raise the grade, as it were. The funding mechanism is the same way. If you look back to under the Obama administration, the stimulus funding, about 12% of that was actually directed to infrastructure, but it was only for shovel-ready projects. And what happened then, as the states were under a lot of pressure, they backed off their funding as this new federal funding came in. They could redirect that funding to other programs that they needed to do. So the net gain was, in effect, zero. A lot of the states, as Bob had mentioned, subsequently have raised their own revenues via increases in fees and funds, but the federal government hasn't. So, that's what we need. We need the states exerting new funding mechanisms and the federal government to match it. As Bob mentioned, the identified needs back in 2010 for Pennsylvania was $3.5 billion, and approximately $2.5 is what the state came up with under Act 89. So that $1 billion hole was because the federal government has never stepped up the match. So we are really excited that the president's speaking about this. We do believe this is bipartisan. Everyone benefits. So we are really interested to see the details. Obviously, the private side is a little bit unidentified at this time. The $200 billion that's being discussed is exciting. But as far as the gas tax goes, I always like to talk to people about it. Like, imagine if you were getting paid the same salary as 1993. How much could you buy with that money? And that's, in effect, what's happening. There's an erosion of the purchasing power of the gas tax. And what the proposed increase that's being discussed is really to bring it back to that original purchasing power back in 93, that's estimated to be 25 cents.
You know, and I'm not arguing with you. I think that's a good way to lay it out. But those who would oppose or would see an additional 25 cents a gallon would say, well, yeah, everything else has gone up since 1993 as well. And so that 25 cents per gallon, you know, would add a lot to my budget, especially for those who have to, who commute in a car a long distance. You know, we can talk a little bit about that. In fact, I'd like our callers to weigh in on that. If you see the benefit of an updated and improved infrastructure, 25 cents a gallon, too much to ask? Something you're willing to pay, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Now, Greg, I'm going to come back to you and talk about some of these other non-transportation items in just a moment. But while we are on transportation, Bob, as Greg just said, that there's a little bit of an unknown here with the private part of this. You were around, and I'm old enough, it's only 10 years ago, when Governor Ed Rendell at the time talked about either selling the Pennsylvania Turnpike or leasing the Pennsylvania Turnpike, did not go over very well. There are examples of where that has happened. Indiana was one that was pointed to at the time. That's just one way that private, but you said something to me before we went in the air. If you get a private company investing, one of the key words there is investing. They want something in return. So talk about how that could work and will it work here in Pennsylvania?
Well, I think the public-private partnership model is one where basically you have private equity firms, other investment vehicles in there. They're looking for a return on the investment. It was a very interesting article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday that spoke to this, and the headline was that private equity firms may pass on the infrastructure bill, which I thought was very interesting. So let me go back. So back about 10 years ago, the lease concession model, and that's what we generally refer to here as it used to be called selling the turnpike,
right.
Here in Pennsylvania. They did that in Indiana. They leased the toll road for 99 years. They took an upfront payment of, $3.5 billion, something like that. You know, the devil's in the details. There were some built-in guarantees for the investor there, which I think made it not such a great deal for Indiana. At the time, I said to my counterparts out there, "What happens when the money runs out?" And they said, "We'll figure that out later." And there they are, and they are doing that right now. You know, I mean, so you take a one-time payment and the money runs out. They were able to take that. Now, let me just say one thing on the positive side: they were able to take that money and invest it in a lot of new projects out in Indiana, so it worked out okay. What we did see then subsequent to that was the model went to a toll risk financing. A lot of that went on in Florida, and where the concessionaires, these are the investors, if you will, took some of the risk on the return from toll revenue. When that didn't work out, they exited that market and went to something called an availability payment. Availability payment means we're going to invest money up front, and you're going to get...
When you say we.
Investor, the private equity firm or the private investor will invest money up front. You'll get the asset now, as opposed to maybe 10 years from now, and that availability of that asset now is how they come up with the term availability payment, and then the government agency pays them back over time. And we're seeing that in Pennsylvania with a project in known as the Rapid Bridge Replacement Project.
Is it working?
It's working to the model that it anticipated, which is... the bridges were built over, they originally hoped to be built over a three-year period. That's not quite finished yet, but they will be built on a faster track. But what happens is then you have a payment back to the investor over a 35-year period of time. It's really a very similar model to going to the bond market. It's not that much different. So the question is, where is that market today? If suddenly we're looking at a huge investment idea for this infrastructure package, again, according to what the Journal said, looking at Blackstone and and Carlyle Group and some of the other major investors, they're not so excited about investing in public facilities. They're looking more like maybe at utilities and other private or semi-private entities.
You talked about Act 89 that came during the Corbett administration a few years ago that injected a few billion dollars into transportation. There are some factors here that were unanticipated. A lot of that money has gone towards state police coverage of municipalities that don't have their own police department. So, you know, that's another show. And in fact, we can talk about that. But
I think that, one of the reasons if people are dubious about increasing the gas tax or increasing funding for transportation is just that. And it's really unfortunate because we talked about the $2.5 billion that Act 89 raises. Well, right now, $200 million of that right off the top is going to prop up the state's general fund. What I would say under the guise of funding the state police. So it's one thing we worked very hard to try to get that money back into infrastructure and transportation investment.
But you are aware of the state's fiscal situation.
Of course I am, yeah.
Yeah. So my question is, even a few years after Act 89, 5 years after Act 89, is there an appetite in this state, in state government, to put more money into infrastructure?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, absolutely. There's an abundant need of
well, maybe appetite is not the right word, but can it happen?
Everybody wants to invest in infrastructure. It's who's going to pay for
right,
it.
Right, exactly.
That's the question.
I mean, this is one issue in which both Democrats and Republicans can agree on as far as the need.
Right. And I don't get too far afield here, but I think one of the things we have to look at going forward is how do we pay for it? The gas tax is a consumption-based tax. Right now, you see more and more of a move towards electric vehicles and non-gasoline-powered vehicles. Right now, we have no funding mechanism to capture, their user fee, if you will. I think we need to look at that into the future as well. We really need to look at alternative fuel vehicles and how they're going to pay their share of road user fees.
Greg Scott, I want to turn to some of the other infrastructures here in Pennsylvania. You mentioned stormwater. Not a day goes by in the wintertime that you don't hear a story here in Pennsylvania about a water main break or, a pipe that has cracked or, something like that. A lot of the water sewage infrastructure that we have in this state is 50, 60, some 100 years old, over 100 years old. I have to say that many times it's surprising that it's lasted that long. Could you give us a sense of the age of some of these underground infrastructures, and not just underground, but some of the infrastructures dealing with water and sewer and that kind of thing?
Sure. In my office, I have a little section of water pipe. It was made of wood. It was actually unearthed in 1970. That's how the term fire plug actually originated. They made wooden water lines. The pumper trucks pulled by horses would come up, dig a hole in the street, knock a hole in it, fill it up, pump it out, put the fire out, and then they would put a plug back in the wood pipe, hence fire plug. It's very fascinating with the history and evolution of the infrastructure, and obviously what I focus in is water, sewer, stormwater, so it's all the buried infrastructure that's forgotten. A lot of this dates back, as you said, 80, 90, 100 years old. We saw the explosion post-World War II, 1950s, so a lot of that pipe is, 60, 70 years old. A lot of the materials used then, vitrified clay pipe, is brittle. The freeze-thaw cycles, the pipe will break, crack, water will leak into a sewer and overload the sewer plant. We have a lot of combined sewers. Actually, Pennsylvania has the most combined sewer overflows, CSOs, of any state in the nation. And it's really a factor of when our urbanized centers were built. That was the convenient technology, just pipe it to a stream or a river and let it go downstream.
Wow.
And so now we're dealing with these legacies that need to be updated and fixed. I think it's important to note, and ASC did a study called the Failure to Act Study, and if anybody's ever interested, all these studies are available online. And what they determined, if we continue to fund our infrastructure at today's current rate, it's costing an average family of four $3,400 a year in added cost, money out of your pocket. And what we're trying to talk about is not necessarily this discussion of do we need to raise money or not. Obviously, the obvious answer is no, I don't want to spend any more if I can keep it. It's that this is costing you money. if we spend a little, you'll save more. So there's a return on investment component of this. And that's really what is critical, is identifying infrastructure projects that really reduce cost of operations for business. The price of lettuce being shipped from California to Pennsylvania will go down because it could come quicker. Reliability of sewer systems and water systems. Businesses can function because of your manufacturing facility and these systems are unreliable. They've got to shut down. They've got to lay people off. You know, all these insidious costs that really aren't obvious are dragging our economy down. So this discussion is really, do we need to fund to then reduce the cost of that infrastructure is having on us? And hence the net gain is we all have more money in our pocket.
Real quick, you mentioned the wooden pipe you have in your office. The pipes that transport water today, what are they made of and how long do they last?
Yeah, today what we see is ductile iron pipe, which is really the evolution. The old pipes are cast iron. Ductile is more manufactured, reliable, and durable, but it can have corrosion issues. PVC, polyvinyl chloride, plastic pipe, became very, very popular in the 70s. It's lightweight. It doesn't corrode with the soils, but it's a little more brittle if you're in an urbanized area and someone's digging for a cable and you dink it, it breaks. Another pipe we're seeing a lot of rise in use is high-density polyethylene. It's a more durable plastic pipe. A lot of technology is being developed. There's a lot of internal repair. So instead of digging up the streets, we can line pipes, sewers particularly, but there's starting to be a rise in lining water lines. So we don't need to dig, less disturbance to the roads, lower cost. So there's a lot of innovation going on in this buried infrastructure.
We have an email here from Thomas, a listener, says, regarding water and sewer utilities, since shareholder-owned railways have such a high score, what is the difference between investor-owned utilities and municipal-owned utilities? Are investor-owned utilities in better shape than municipal-owned, and are many cities selling off their water, sewer, gas utilities so investor-owned companies can invest capital to improve those services?
I will say that there's very few public-owned gas systems. There are a few in Pennsylvania. I know that there was some municipalities that ran their own power plants, et cetera, at the dawn of the industrial age. But in general, power and natural gas is really privately held.
What about water and sewer?
That's a mix. I think there's still a predominance of public-owned water and sewer systems, but there are private systems. Pennsylvania American, Philadelphia Suburban are probably the two largest. Around the Pittsburgh area, it's interesting to note that the water rates for Pennsylvania American are higher than the city-owned system. Reliability is really, they're both dealing with the age systems of about the same age. There's issues with lead lines. You could argue that it's questionable whether there's just clearly one's better than the other. They both need to invest. There was an incident some years ago where on the private side, there's an outage for multiple days. They got a lot of flack for not improving their system recently. We've seen a lot of issues on the public side. So I think saying that just sell it off, it's a panacea, is not necessarily true. A lot of the specifics are how the systems are run, how they're financed, have been burdened with debt. Public-owned systems obviously don't have a profit margin, while private-owned systems, they're paying stockholders, so there's that inherent additional cost. But you could argue maybe there's some efficiencies that could be located without government. But a well-run public system is equal to a private system. So really, it's really specific to the system and how they're run. I don't think you can make that blanket statement that if you just sell it and everything's fine.
Yeah. We're going to talk more about that, take some phone calls in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I am Scott Lamar. So, talk about timeliness, a show on Here and Now, talking about China investing in their infrastructure. So, we have kind of an infrastructure theme here on WITF today. Joining us during this portion of the program is Bob Latham, Executive Vice President at Associated Pennsylvania Constructors. He's also with the Pennsylvania Highway Information Association. And Gregory Scott, a senior engineer with Buckhart Horn Engineers, Architects, and Planners in Pittsburgh, also chairman of ASCE's Pittsburgh Section Government Relations Committee. If you have a question or a comment, 1-800-729-7532 is the number to call. I was asking that question about the proposal to impose a 25% or I keep saying percent, 25 cent per gallon tax on gasoline that would go for infrastructure. 1-800-729-7532 or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. A couple things here that were mentioned. Bill in Lancaster called in and said I-95 does have tolls in other places. Bob mentioned that Pennsylvania is the only place where 95 doesn't have tolls, only state. And I'll get to this one in just a moment, having to do with support for President Trump. But first, let's go to Jennifer in Blauserville. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, Scott Lamar. I love your show. And
thank
you for having it and educating the people and us able to speak in out about our problems.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'm very excited. I want to weigh in about the gas tax. I live in a rural area, and people are poor, and they live paycheck to paycheck. And towards the end of the month, they have no gas money left, and they walk to work. And I'm talking about, like, Duncannon, you know, and there's only some places they can work. And they were actually walking to work in that snowstorm because they were out of gas by the end of the month. And this gas tax really only hurts the poor and the people who are on fixed incomes. Everybody else, they fill up, they have no problem. They all have big cars. And it really hurts us. And I wish you could find another solution and not another gas tax. I beg you, I implore you. And Pennsylvania has the highest gas as it is. And I really would like you to find another way.
All right, Jennifer.
I thank you so much for allowing me to be on the program and speak my opinion.
Well, thank you very much, Jennifer, for your call. Bob, she is correct in that Pennsylvania has the highest gas taxes in the country. We don't have the highest gas prices. California, I think, still holds that distinction, and New York, some of those states. But the point that she makes, that a gasoline tax will hurt people disproportionately who don't have a whole lot of money and have to rely on their vehicles to get to work.
Well, certainly the people in the rural areas are relying on their vehicles to get to work and to get around. In the urban areas, you have other other transit options. Now, it is pointed out that there's public transit in all 67 counties, but certainly not to the extent that it is in the southeast or southwest or even.
No, those rural counties do have some, but not that much.
There are, there are other solutions that are being looked at. Unfortunately, the gas tax is really right now is what we have in place as a as an administrative infrastructure. We're using the word infrastructure. I'm not talking about the ability to raise the money and so on and so forth. I think one of the things that we need to look at are. Again, what I talked about earlier was some of the non-gasoline powered vehicles now, which are, when you look at Tesla and some of the other electric vehicles right now, they're not paying anything. There's a potential option there. There has also been looked at the national level in the past, something called a freight excise fee. There's a lot of right now, if you ship product by air, there's an air freight excise fee that goes to help pay for airport infrastructure. There's been talk about applying something similar to that to freight movement. Now, obviously that would have an impact on goods delivered to your home, but it wouldn't have it would negate the need to increase the gas tax.
What about a mileage tax? I mean, this has been discussed too, as we are getting away from and again, we don't know when that will occur. Widespread, but getting away from gasoline, or at least with gas, with cars that are getting better gas mileage and that kind of thing.
It's funny, right now I think we have the technology to implement a mileage tax. if you've driven the turnpike, you pay a mileage tax, particularly if you have an easy pass transponder. I think the technology is there that it could be applied. For some reason, people who don't mind giving their location to every app on their phone have a big problem with, you know, a big brother aspect of a mileage tax. I get amused with that, but I think you're right. That's an option as well.
Greg, let me follow up on that. We had Linda in Hummelstown said that 25 cents per gallon is too much for her. And she had a political question here, wanted to know if the ACE backs President Trump politically.
We are a 501c3. We do not have political affiliation. We commend the president for taking leadership. We haven't seen that from any other administration for decades. We do support some of the conversation he had about streamlining the efficiency of government. A good example is the federal review process of a project. In the past, you go to one agency, they review, then it goes to the second agency, then it goes to the third. We've been saying for 20 years this should be happening simultaneously to streamline the process, to shorten it. That he's come out in favor of that. We think that's wonderful. So, you know, what we find is that both parties have pros and cons. We really want to see the infrastructure addressed. We believe it's a bipartisan discussion. We do not affiliate to one party or the other.
And that is a big point that we only have touched on during this program, is that part of what the president is proposing would have to do with the reducing the amount of time for, you know, some of these regulations to be applied to. Let's go to Tom in Lancaster. Tom, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to talk about the gas tax also. And I don't have a problem paying an extra 25 cents a gallon. I do have a problem with the compensation for the workers, like PennDOT workers, I think are overpaid and overcompensated. And what are they doing to cut expenses instead of raising costs?
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Bob, I don't know if you can address the salaries or the pay of PennDOT, but we do know that there are projects, there are regulations in place that prevailing wage, for example, that some people have complained about and said that if you didn't have prevailing wage, that maybe you can explain that it would cut down on the cost of some of these projects.
I'm going to talk about compensation for state employees in general, and not so much for workers, but the biggest problem we have financial in Pennsylvania right now is the soaring costs of our public sector pension system.
Problem, yeah.
That really festers into everything, and it really is when you look at why are we taking $200 to $300 million a year out of the gas tax that motorists are paying now and putting it into the state police? It's primarily because of this ballooned pension problem. It was, you know, it was addressed. It was sold as a panacea in the early 2000s. It was never addressed. You know, now you see it trickling down to municipalities who can no longer afford a local police force, so that they're abandoning that, which puts more and more pressure on the state police, et cetera, et cetera. You know, some legislators might sit here and say we fixed it last year, but it's a 35-year fix. So that's a big problem. As far as compensation for construction workers, we are facing a workforce dearth of people coming in to work on construction projects. And here's why. You work 9 months out of the year. Then you get laid off on unemployment. Most of the work that is done at night. And if you have any idea what it's like to work on an interstate highway under traffic, if you don't, I'd urge you to pull over sometime and stand next to the interstate and see what it feels like to have a truck go by at 70 miles an hour through your construction zone. That's their work environment. It's not very attractive. The wages, I think, are fair. Now, as far as efficiencies are concerned, let's go back to those a little bit. Our organization works with the department and engineers on looking at longer life pavement, longer life materials on a daily basis. We continue to make strides on that, looking at ways that snow and ice removal can have a not such a detrimental impact on pavements.
We do have a question here, and gentlemen, we only have about 2 minutes. I want to get Donna's question in here because it is one that we addressed here before in Pennsylvania. Won't the majority of the gas tax revenue go to the larger metropolitan areas, or will it be distributed by where it's collected? This was part of the argument during the Rendell administration that SEPTA, Pittsburgh, Allegheny Port would get most of that transit money and the rural areas would not see it.
Act 89 has four buckets of funding, one of which is specifically a portion of the state sales tax, which goes to transit. So I think everybody needs to know there's very, very little gas tax money that's going to public transit, number one. Number two, there's a distribution center of our funding throughout the state. 40-some percent of the money that's raised is raised in the southeast, and it's spread across Pennsylvania. So it's a false notion that the southeast is sucking up money from other areas.
We only have a minute or so left, and Greg Scott, want to thank you and Bob Latham for being with us today. Greg, so going forward, what do you want to see? What's the next steps that can be taken to improve our infrastructure in the state?
Really, it's up to the people. The function we do with the report card is raise awareness, let people understand these issues. If your ride quality, the delays in traffic, the reliability of your water system, flooding of your streets, if that's unacceptable, the people need to voice it. Because if that is currently acceptable, the elected officials will go elsewhere and solve other problems. So really, it's up to all of us to kind of demand the quality of life that we really expect to see, and then the elected officials and private companies will come and address that.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Yep.
There's a Smart Talk road trip, bus trip to the National, make that to the Heinz History Center in Pittsburgh next Tuesday, where we'll discuss children's icon Fred Rogers, as well as mark the 50th anniversary of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. If you'd like to reserve a seat on the bus and watch the broadcast being produced, go to WITF.org/events. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Heart Health Month, and we'll talk about defibrillation, and that's coming up tomorrow, talking about Health Heart Month. So be sure to tune in. I'll be able to say it at that point.
Smart Talk is produced by WITF as part of our mission to deliver relevant, high-quality programming. Support comes from Capital Blue Cross, which shares WITF's commitment to being a trusted resource in our communities. Capital Blue Cross, live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC Pinnacle, bringing quality care to your community through Harrisburg, Community Osteopathic, West Shore, Carlisle, Hanover, Lancaster, Lititz, and Memorial Hospitals. More information is available at upmcpinnacle.com.